Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly, or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly, or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly, or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly, or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. Welcome back to Issues Etc. If you were in the nation's capital, down by the Smithsonian, you would see something. Now, they say what you're going to see there is the cutting edge of our knowledge with respect to human evolution, going back hundreds of thousands, even millions of years. And you walk in and you see the reconstructed creatures there. You walk and you see a skeleton or two, skulls and things like that. It's the Hall of Human Origins at the Smithsonian. It's just opened. It's a multi-million dollar enterprise. And it says it is the cutting edge of our knowledge regarding human evolution. Is that true? Joining us to talk about the opening of the Hall of Human Origins at the Smithsonian in the nation's capital, Ken Ham, president and CEO, founder of Answers in Genesis and the Creation Museum. He's host of a daily radio talk show called Answers with Ken Ham, and he's author of numerous books, including The New Answers, Book 3. Ken, welcome back.
Hey, great to be with you, Todd.
They say that it represents the cutting edge of our knowledge regarding human evolution. How would you describe what is there at the Hall of Human Origins?
Well, in a sense, you could say it is their cutting edge of human origins because it's nothing new. It's what they've been saying for many years, using the same old accounts of, you know, Neanderthal supposedly being some human ancestor, Homo erectus, the Australopithecines, and so on. I mean, on the Answers in Genesis website, we already have answers to all of these. But, you know, what is sad about this whole $21 million exhibit is, for instance, Rick Potts, who's the curator, actually said to a Washington Post staff writer in an interview, he said that we're not just related to apes, but to the banana tree too, and that's one of the signs on a wall panel. So really, what they're doing here is just using the same supposed human ancestors that they've, you know, been talking about for years, and that creationists have got all sorts of research and information and answers to show they're either apes or humans, but they're not ape men, so-called, or ape women. But they're teaching generations of kids that they're just related to apes or a banana tree, which means there's nothing special about human life. They're just animals. So why should we be surprised when kids start acting like that?
As far as you know, is there any alternative explanation proffered there at the Hall of Human Origins?
I don't believe so. I mean, I haven't been to the exhibit. I mean, I've read about it in, for instance, the Washington Post, and read interviews with the curator. For instance, the curator actually says, these are his words, according to an interview with Washington Post, there's no Adam and Eve here. If you believe that the world and man was created in 7 days and that's only thousands of years old, you might have a little problem with an exhibition that talks about a process of 6 to 8 million years and then goes on to talk about the wall panel stating we're not just related to apes but to banana tree too. You know, it seems like there's no alternative explanation. In other words, it's just indoctrinating people. Of course, they claim that they want people to question and so on. But it's interesting. The Washington Post, in their article, actually started off by saying every fossil tells a story. And you see, That's the issue. Every fossil does not tell a story. One tells a story about the fossils. And when you dig up these fossils, when you dig up bones of the Neanderthal man or the Australopithecines or whatever, that's all you have. And they don't have tags with them and they don't have photographs with them. And then, depending on your belief, your starting point, you're going to make up a story about them. Now, creationists will have a whole different story, if you like, than evolutionists because they believe in evolution. They're going to try and fit them into evolution no matter what. And that's exactly what they're doing.
I think a lot of people, kind of the layperson's conception of what must go on is someone goes out, they find a fossil that looks perhaps partly human, a skull that doesn't seem to be chimp, doesn't seem to be human, somewhere in between. And then they have such a vast knowledge of such things, comparing with other fossils, they are able to kind of definitively tell that story. Oh, well, this is where it fits in the whole line here. And I think the average person thinks this is all sewn up. This is no longer even questionable.
Yeah, and, you know, they present it that way. But how many times – we had an article once in our magazine. It was entitled Not Another Ape Man. Because how many times have they found something that they said was a human ancestor later on and it changed their minds? I mean, even the ones that are listed, you know, in the information that I got off the website listed in the Hall of Fame, which I haven't seen, as I said. I can only go on what I've read about it. But they say they have the hobbit, you know, from Indonesia there. Well, because the hobbit was, what, 3 foot tall and weighed about 65 pounds, some say it was some sort of evolutionary ancestor or whatever. Others say it was either a variation within humans like dwarf or it had microcephalus, a disease, and that's why it is the way it is. But I doubt whether they say those sorts of things in the display. Or when it comes to the Australopithecines, the fact that the Australopithecines, for instance, have a hyoid bone, that's a bone at the base of the tongue, similar to a chimpanzee's, and their organ of balance is chimp-like, not human-like, and neck vertebrae are short and thick like a gorilla, and the fingers are long and curved like a chimpanzee's. I wonder if they tell that at the Human Hall of Origins. I doubt it, because every so-called ape man display I've been to, like the British Museum of Natural History, where they have the Australopithecines, they sort of make the models look human-like and make out that it's, you know, some ancestor of humans, but don't give all the information that makes it very clear. These are obviously apes, and they're not humans or related to humans whatsoever. And the trouble is the average person doesn't get to hear this information. It's usually censored from the public. For instance, you know, they obviously have Neanderthal man there at this Hall of Human Origins, but I wonder if they tell people that Neanderthal man had controlled use of fire, buried their dead. Neanderthal man also made musical instruments, did wonderful cave paintings, that they found Neanderthals and modern humans together in caves in Israel, that they have a hyoid bone that's not the same as an ape's, but is distinctive of humans because of humans' ability to have speech, and so it goes on. I'm sure that sort of information is not there, because if it was, it would cause people to start questioning evolution.
So much of it is not the bones themselves, but we've talked to Dr. David Menton, you know him well, and I've asked him about Neanderthal, and he said this is a variant within the acceptable variations in human morphology, at least with regard to the bones, and he says it's a modern human being, and now albeit perhaps stockier and may have had you know, been on the edges of human variation, but it is undoubtedly human. But the skin that they put on these things, they talk in the article that I read about forensically recreated faces of mankind's prehistoric relatives. What little tricks are played there when they actually try to put the skin on, so to speak?
Well, you know, we've seen it all before. They'll take ape skeletons, make them look human-like, and they take human skulls and make them look ape-like. And you can do that. You know, an artist can do that very, very easily. In fact, there's been a number of instances over the years where they've asked artists to come up with different renderings of what a particular skull, you know, belong to, and they'll choose the one that they think fits their theory the best. And I know there was one specific example. I think it could have even been in Lucy, but some of them made them look more ape-like, some of them more human-like. But because they want it to be a human ancestor, then they'll I'll choose the one that looks more human-like. And you can do that just by the way in which you flesh out the nose or the cheeks or the lips or whatever it is. And you can give it a particular look. You can make the eyes look human-like, or you can make the eyes look ape-like. I mean, that's what artists can do. And when they say it's a forensics reconstruction, well, what they're really doing is saying, because this is an ape-like creature, as an ancestor to man, so we want it to look a bit this way. And they doctor those things. That's why in the textbooks you'll see different renderings for different skull, for the same skulls. You'll see different renderings in different textbooks. And unfortunately, they're the tricks that are played on the public and very unsuspecting public in that way.
Finally, then, if a family decides to visit the Hall of Human Origins, what do the parents need to tell their children as they walk through and see the various displays? About 1 minute, Ken.
Well, I hope they've taken them through the Creation Museum first, but I would say that they need to teach them that scientists, when they dig up these skulls, dig up these bones, that they don't dig them up with labels on them, and because they believe in evolution, they're trying to fit that evidence to their ideas already. They have a certain belief, and that really, when you analyze it, they're either apes or they're humans, and there are no in-between forms. And actually, what you find totally fits with what the Bible tells us. God made distinct kinds, and he made humans separate to the animals. But they need to help them understand there's a difference between what you find and the story you tell. You can look at the bones, but then the story on the sign is man's interpretation, not what you dig up.
Folks, you'll find a link to Answers in Genesis under the Listen on Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Ken Ham is president, CEO, and founder of Answers in Genesis and the Creation Museum. He's host of a daily radio talk show, Answers with Ken Ham, and author of numerous books, including the new Answers Book 3. Ken, thank you very much for being our guest.
Hey, anytime. Thank you.
When we come back, Greg Kokel's going to join us. A recent article in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch caught my attention. Leonard Pitts, Jr., wrote about the acceptance of homosexuality. They can't say what we can't accept. He says, how many lies, alibis, and justifications do we need before we accept that being gay is not shameful? We'll see what Greg Kokel has to say in response on the other side of the break. On this Monday afternoon, March the 22nd, our call-in number 1-877-623-MYIE. 877-623-6943. Email us with questions or comments right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or Twitter us @issuesetc. In the second hour of the program, audio open lines. Who do you think compromised on the issue of abortion and health care reform? President Obama or Congressman Bart Stupak and five other pro-life Democrats? Your answer in about 15 minutes. We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology. And we'd like to send you an Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker.
Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at @issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at @issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at @issuesetc.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
Issues Etc. is listener supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. please consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.